The Volume.
The Draymond Green Show, presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. No better place to bet the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. There's a lot of reasons. It's America's number one sportsbook. Incredibly easy to use. Super safe, totally secure. Super fast payouts in as quick as 2 hours. You're not going to get that anywhere. Also, same game parlay bets, live betting. It's the best. There really is no competition. By the way, I hope you people are following my college football bets. I'm sort of red hot. I've won 11 of 12. Hey, if you're new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. I did it in 15 seconds. Get started now. Sign up. Please use the promo code Colin so they know we sent you. Please use the promo code Colin, C-O-L-I-N. FanDuel Sportsbook app. Sign up.
Welcome back to the Draymond Green Show. This is the fourth episode. Exciting week in sports. A lot of things going on. We're talking awards. We're talking possible records being broken. And this week's guest, we'll have Meta World Peace, which I am extremely excited about. Incredible player, hell of a defender. But more importantly, a trailblazer in our sport. And we'll speak more on that with Meta. But first, as we talk records being broken, I am extremely excited about this week in sports because of a record that's about to be broken, in which I have watched of the 2,600 and some odd threes that has been made, I've probably seen about 2,000 of them actually be made. And it's incredible. As you know, we're talking Steph Curry about to break Ray Allen's record. I think currently today he is 15 threes away. And it's a beautiful thing, man. I remember coming into the NBA and number one, Steph Curry was not Steph Curry as we know today. You got to remember, this is 10 years ago. We're talking Steph Curry coming off of injuries. We're talking Steph Curry that I'm in here doing a workout just in the offseason, and Steph Curry shows back up in Oakland and the owner of the team is watching, our general manager's watching, coach watching, five other people in the front office are watching him do an individual workout. Individual workout. Season has not started yet. We're just ramping up, starting to get into the flow of things and starting to prepare for training camp. And they're watching his workout like a hawk. And then we go into training camp and, you know, his workout was great. I watched him shoot that day. It was incredible. But then we roll into training camp and there's kind of questions about whether Steph Curry will get paid or not. Is he worth the extension? Will his ankles hold up? The whole nine yards. He went on that same preseason to sign a four-year, $44 million deal, which ended up being one of the biggest discounts in NBA history because after he signed that four-year, $44 million deal, that very year he got snubbed to All-Star. And if I'm not mistaken, the following year, I think he made it. But that's when Steph Curry started to take off and became the Steph Curry as we know. Obviously, those are the first 2 years of my career. My third year, we won the NBA Finals, which is he signed an extension. It is the second year of a $44 million extension. He's making $11 million a year. He's not even the highest paid person on our team. I don't even think he was the second. I don't even think he was the fourth highest paid player on our team. He goes on to win MVP that year. We win a championship, and he's making $11 million a year. And the rest of that is history. But what I do want to talk about is Steph Curry breaking that record. And obviously, the record says that he's the best shooter we've ever seen by the amount of threes, and he'll be number one. But what the eye test tells us is totally different than what the record tells us, because the reality is records can be broken and, you know, it's just how the cookie crumbles. For instance, Steph Curry's three-point record will 100% be broken. And from the time he's done playing, it'll probably only take someone 5 to 6 more years to break that record, if that. Reason being, Trae Young comes into the NBA attempting probably 6 or 7 three-pointers a game. Donovan Mitchell comes into the NBA attempting probably 6 or 7 three-pointers a game. Steph Curry came into the NBA attempting 2 three-pointers a game because it's just a totally different ball game. 2 or 3 three-pointers a game. It's a totally different ball game. In large part due to Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. And the way those guys shot the basketball, I can even think back to the beginning of the championship run where everybody from Charles Barkley to, you know, all the people in the media saying a jump shooting team can't win a championship. They'll never win. They're a jump shooting team. They won't win a championship. Those guys shoot too many threes. Mark Jackson made a comment of Steph Curry ruined the game of basketball with the way he plays. And at the time, it was totally blown out of proportion. It was blown out of proportion, obviously, because Mark Jackson had just been here as our coach, and everybody's taking it as a slight. The reality is Mark Jackson, who is one of the best basketball minds I've ever been around, was spot on with his comment. And what he meant by that comment was, nowadays you have guys shooting threes that shouldn't attempt a three to save their life. And the types of threes they're shooting, you got guys coming off the dribble shooting threes that's not good shooters at all. And you have kids trying to shoot an NBA three and they're throwing it from their shoulder and throwing it from their hip to shoot an NBA three. And it's all because of Steph Curry. So when Mark Jackson made that comment, Steph Curry ruined the game of basketball, that's what he was getting at. And he couldn't be more accurate with his statement before anybody else realized it. It's because it totally changed the way the game is played. Just by the way Steph Curry and Klay Thompson has been playing the game all this time. And I think when I look back on, especially the 10 years now that I've been here, most people, especially in the analytical department, didn't think Steph Curry shot enough threes. To this day, they still don't think Steph Curry shoots enough threes. And so that just goes to show you where the game is going and why his record will be broken probably within 5 to 6 years of him finishing playing the game. However, forget the record being broken. The fact that he is breaking this record and he's doing it in almost half the amount of games that Ray Allen did it, it really just speaks to who Steph Curry is, the type of talent that he is, the shooter that he is. It's one of the most incredible things. And I've had the pleasure of being able to watch most of these threes. And I think the most incredible thing about it is some of them are off pin downs. A bunch of them come off pin downs. A bunch of them come off spot ups. But the majority of them probably comes off the dribble. And I think that's what's so special about it is you're talking a guy, you're not talking a guy who's spotting up and shoot and just catching and shooting. By the way, no disrespect to the guys that do catch, spot up and catch and shoot, because for those greats that does do that, come on, I'll take the lessons. But the way Steph Curry shoots the basketball and the variety of shots that he's taking and the type of shots that he's taking, the variety of defenses that he's facing, Steph Curry doesn't go into a game and not face a double team. No matter who we're playing against, at some point throughout the game, he's going to face a double team. And the fact that he's still able to make the amount of threes that he's made is impressive. But what's even more impressive is that he's able to get up as many good attempts as he's able to get up. And I think that is a testament to his ball handling. But I think it's even more so a testament to his understanding the knowledge of the game and how he continues to move and find open spots. You know, he see a situation, the setup of a play, and he sprints from one corner all the way through, all the way to the top of the floor, but taking the longest route possible. Number one, the discipline that it takes to guard that. Not many people that have that type of discipline. Number two, the effort and conditioning level and stamina that takes is absolutely insane. And number three, the mindset that you have to have in order to be okay shooting the ball that many times. When you shoot the ball that many times, you're going to have some bad misses. You're going to have some bad games. And one thing I've never seen with Steph Curry is his confidence waver. I've seen Steph Curry miss his first 6 three-pointers and heat check the 7th one from 33 feet out. Like, as if he just knocked down 4 or 5 in a row and he's heat checking. It's the most incredible thing. And I think that is the biggest testament to the shooter, to the record that he's breaking, is the confidence that he has. It never wavers. And I am honored to be his teammate. I am honored to be along this journey with him. I am thankful and appreciative that I've been able to witness such greatness. Not every day do you have the opportunity to be around greatness or witness greatness. Some people don't actually witness greatness in their life. And when I say witness greatness, I mean especially to be around someone who's the best ever at something. You know, you're talking the likes of Jeff Bezos, of Elon Musk, of, you know, all of these guys who are the best ever at what they do. That's Steph Curry. He's the best to ever shoot a basketball. And I think the most interesting thing about it is we can all debate whether Elon Musk is a better CEO than Jeff Bezos, or did Elon Musk create a better company than Jeff Bezos, or did Mark Zuckerberg create a better company than Jack Dorsey. Like, you can debate that, and you're going to get several different answers from different people. When you debate who's the greatest shooter ever, you get one consistent answer, and that's Steph Curry. And I think that is the most incredible thing, because when you're talking the greatest ever at something, it's not really fact-based. Like, we can say, you know, Ray Allen has the most threes, but some people would argue that Reggie Miller was a better shooter than Ray Allen. You know, and so that would be a situation where you say, well, it's not fact-based just by Ray having more threes than Reggie. Now, granted, Ray Allen is great, and I don't think anyone's really arguing that, but just as an example. But with Steph Curry, Ray Allen won't even argue that. Reggie Miller won't even argue that. All of those guys say Steph Curry is the best, and I think it is absolutely incredible. I mean, you're talking a guy who, when he shoots the ball from half court, you think it's going in. It actually goes in quite often, but it's unheard of. And like I said, I am blessed and honored to have the opportunity to go to work every day with someone like that who's that great at something. And man, I am looking forward to possibly tomorrow, Steph Curry breaking this record. I was having a conversation with our general manager, Bob Myers, earlier today, and he said, so what are you expecting tomorrow? Like, are you expecting number 30 to shoot 25 threes? I said, well, I'm honestly expecting him to shoot 30 threes tomorrow. He's like, really? You think so? Did he say that? I said, he didn't say a word. And he's like, oh, so he's not thinking about it. I said, is he not thinking about it? I can't say he's not thinking about it. I think that's tough not to think about. But what I can tell you is he would never come out and say, oh, I'm shooting 33s tomorrow. But I told Bob, I said, Bob, I'll know right away from the very first possession what type of time he on. If he's legitimately trying to break that record tomorrow, or is he just going to gradually keep getting there and just play the game and do? And he was like, but we can't lose the game. I said, we won't lose the game, Bob. We'll be just fine. He won't do that. But I am expecting him to shoot 33s tomorrow. So if Steph Curry come out and shoot 33s tomorrow, or even 27, you heard it here first on the Draymond Green Show, because that is my take. That's what I'm guessing. And I think Steph Curry will be bombing threes against Portland tomorrow. And don't count him out, because there's an outside chance that he could break that record tomorrow. So I'm looking forward to that. I think it's absolutely incredible that he's going to be breaking this record, but I also don't think no better person to do it, because the way he's changed the game of basketball, not just at this level, but at every level of basketball, I think it's a beautiful thing, and him breaking this record is just like a stamp of like, you know, I did change the game of basketball, but just it just stamps it all. We all already believe he's the greatest shooter ever. That's the stamp. And I am thrilled and happy to see it. I'd also be remiss if I didn't talk about Kenneth Walker III being snubbed as a Heisman candidate, not attending the Heisman ceremony. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. You're talking about a guy who's dominated from start to finish of the season, a team that's had a great year is in a New Year's Six bowl. And by the way, don't tell me, oh, this guy had this or this team was winning. C.J. Stroud, no complaint. C.J. Stroud deserves to be there. You also have Bryce Young, no complaints. Bryce Young deserves to be there. Aiden Hutchinson, I'm not a scum guy. So as a defender, I have the utmost respect and love for them putting a defensive guy up there because that never happens. And as defenders, you rarely get any recognition. And so I do have an appreciation for him being a defensive end and being in the Heisman and the race for the Heisman. But then we also have, and I'm drawing a blank on his name right now, we also have the quarterback from Pittsburgh.
Kenny Pickett.
We have Kenny Pickett, who's the quarterback of Pittsburgh, who's actually playing in the same bowl game as us. They're playing against us, Michigan State. And so if your excuse of Kenneth Walker not being in the Heisman race and not being one of the finalists for the Heisman, if your excuse is, oh, we didn't make the playoff, shame on you, because C.J. Stroud's in the same position and Kenny Pickett's in the same position. And it's actually ridiculous. You have two quarterbacks already. You add a third quarterback. But it also just it just goes to show the flaws in the system. But college as a whole is flawed. The business of college is flawed, and I know everybody's like, oh, they're allowing guys to be paid now. Blah, blah, blah. That's garbage. All the money, you're now seeing all these coaches get paid, and yet the NCAA still aren't paying players. So college is flawed as a whole. The NCAA is flawed. The Heisman voting and the Heisman candidates is obviously flawed. The college football playoff system is ridiculously flawed because it's not win and get in. You know, you have the Georgia-Alabama game ends up meaning absolutely nothing because Georgia loses. And since they were undefeated coming into the game, that doesn't drop them out of the playoff. The only way it mattered is if Alabama would have lost. Well, guess what? We all knew Alabama wasn't losing that game. And so it's not a win and get in. It's not you controlling your own destiny. If Georgia had a falling out, I think Notre Dame's 5. Notre Dame's 5 and Ohio State's 6. Notre Dame lost their game early in the season. I think they lost their game week 1 or 2. And they're still sitting there at 5. And so the whole system is flawed. College as a whole is flawed. It's ridiculous. It's outdated. There's several things that need to change. And Kenneth Walker not making the Heisman, it just goes to show, like, who's deciding this stuff? Because Kenneth Walker, we beat Ohio State and Kenneth Walker's the Heisman winner. We lose to Ohio State and Kenneth Walker's not even a Heisman finalist. And so I just think it's ridiculous. I think it's absolutely flawed. It's pathetic. And a lot of changes need to be made to college as a whole, especially with the changes that are being made in these professional leagues with the G League and the new rules. If college wants to survive, there's a lot of things that needs to be changed. And the latest is their Heisman voting, because there's no way that Kenneth Walker III should not be a Heisman finalist. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's pathetic. But I'm over it. And I think it's time to move to what I think is going to be the absolute best part of this segment, because I am thrilled about it. I couldn't be more honored to have a guest who I have the utmost respect for. And although his appreciation in basketball as a whole isn't where I know it should be. And that's coming from me as a peer who played against this guy, know what he did to the game, know how hard he made it for other teams on the offensive end and even more so on the defensive end. I couldn't be more thrilled and honored to be welcoming Metal World Peace to the show. I am honored today to have a guest who I have the utmost respect for, a guy who I had the opportunity to play against. Thank God for only 2 years, being one of the strongest guys, if not the strongest guy that I ever played against, one of the best defender that I have ever played against, one of the toughest guys to come through the league, a guy who I had the honor of growing up watching play and had tremendous respect for, hailing from Queensbridge by way of St. John's onto the league, caused havoc. One of the toughest guys, as I said, Metta World Peace. Man, thank you, Metta, for coming on to the show. It's an honor to have you on, brother.
Hey, same here, man. It's an honor to be here. I remember seeing you win the finals in Cleveland and had a chance to sit down and just like watch you speak after the championship. I remember that. I wanted to kind of soak that in just as a fan. And I'm just so impressed with what you bring to the table, man. It's incredible.
Thank you. Thank you. No, in kicking this off, man, obviously, I've said publicly, I'm the greatest defender ever. And, you know, when I said that, it caused a lot of commotion and more so amongst other defenders. I enjoy the commotion it caused because obviously in order to be a great defender, you have to have that intensity. You have to have that mindset. And so once it came out like that, I'm like, hell yeah, I wanted it to come off like that. But as a guy who I respect as a defender and everyone you play with respect as a defender, what was the key for you in defending and guarding the way that you did?
I mean, the thing was, like, when I was growing up, I wasn't a scorer, you know? So the only way I could win was on defense, and I used to hate losing. So I learned how to make the game ugly since I was a kid. Like, even when we lost to the Pistons in game six, the score was 71-67. You know, every playoff that I've ever lost, like the score is always low. Even when you lost to the Lakers in game seven, the score was 89-70. Like, you know, like I always like to make it ugly. Deflections, you know, I always knew like deflections, I always like to lead my team with deflections and different things. But then the other thing was just being competitive. And since a kid, I've been, you know, I won everywhere, you know, in New York City, everywhere I played. But one of the things I did was lock people up. And I always thought like that was the best. I always thought I was the best player on the floor, even without scoring, you know. And with that being said, you know, I just wanted to try to shut my opponent down just to be the best player on the floor, even though you might have, you know, a really good offensive game. But I just wanted to shut you down.
No, for sure. And I think for us, the most respect you can get as a player is from your peers. You know, when your peers respect you, that goes way beyond what this newscaster may say, what this analyst may say. When your peers respect you, and one of the guys that we know that we all respect, obviously, is Kobe. And he always said that you were his toughest challenge. And part of the reason why was because you were always switching your stance up. Can you walk me through that?
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of people that I learned a lot from. But, you know, with that being said, defense is always a constant adjustment. And with that being said, you never want to, you know, your job is never done on defense. So what I always like to do is the angles. I would always like to keep this my center of gravity, like kind of in front, you know, of your midsection. And then also, you know, in between, you know, your legs. And I was always just moving with the angle, you know. I was 260, 265 when I played. So I couldn't really stay in front of these small guys. You know what I'm saying? So I always had to use the angles, you know, to my advantage.
That's crazy. The fact that you were 260, 265, moving the way that you did. I think the one thing that when I first came into the league, I was a three. For those that don't know, I wasn't playing the four really. And I never played the five when I first came into the league. Because at that time, it was like Z-Bo and Marc Gasol, Tim Duncan and Tiago Splitter, Paul Gasol and Andrew Bynum. Like, you had Dwight Howard. You had real bigs playing the four with, 7 foot guys playing the four spot. And one thing that I noticed when you guarded me a couple times at the three, you were just rooted into the ground, like couldn't be moved. One of the strongest guys. And when I came out, it was only you and Stack Jack that was like that. Like nobody else was moving like that. And to think that at one point you two guys were on the same team, and you guys could have possibly won a championship, and then things happened. Do you have any regrets in leaving Indiana when you left? Because I personally think that team could have won a championship.
Yeah, big regrets. You know, I was young and dumb. I always tell people don't request trades. I always tell people it's not always greener on the other side. You know, as a basketball player, you know, it goes in phases, and we all are entitled players at times. And I was a very like entitled player. So when I don't get my way, I request trades. I wish I would have saw it through. You know, I wish I would have had the ability and the strength to understand that, you know, things get better, you know, if you just, you know, have a little patience. But as a 23-year-old, I wasn't looking at it like that. And I definitely regret it. I tried to get back to Indiana, actually, right before I got to the Lakers. I was trying to get back to Indiana. But you know, so much happened. They didn't want to take it back.
that's interesting. And obviously, that leads what sparked that was the Malice at the Palace. I actually had the opportunity of playing with Jermaine O'Neal my second year in the league, one of my OGs, and he told us a story. We're all asking about the Malice at the Palace. As a kid, growing up in Saginaw, Michigan, I remember that like it was yesterday. I'm watching a guy. I knew guys on the floor and all type of stuff. So I'm like, yo, what's going on? But I was talking to Jermaine, and he said, man, one thing I loved about our team was we was really a bunch of crazy motherfuckers. Like, that's how Jermaine explained it to me. Like, we were a bunch of crazy motherfuckers. He said, we had Stack Jack and we had Ron. He said, after the brawl, we walk into the locker room, and Ron come in and say, yo, y'all think we're going to get suspended? He said, y'all think we're going to get... Do you remember that? Like, is that true?
I remember that. Because, you know, I'm used to, like, if somebody, you know, you get in a fight, it's, like, over. Because, you know, especially if you didn't start the fight. Mm-hmm. You know, I did everything in my power. I remember that day trying to do everything in my power to not get in any trouble. Because even 3 years into the league, I was getting ejections, suspensions. And I'm like, I just want to have a good season. I just want to, like... you know, continue this legacy. And so I didn't expect to get in that brawl that day. I expected to come out of there clean, you know? And then when I get to the locker room, I'm just like, is this really happening? Like, I just could not believe it. You know, I go to the scorer's table. I lay down, you know, I Ben's throwing his headbands. I'm like just sitting there and I'm just, what's going to, and then boom, this guy throws a cup of beer and then I just snap. Right. And I'm just like, what just happened within like what, 5-10 minutes? Like maybe 8 minutes?
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
That's interesting. It's funny because I had a situation about five, six years ago now, back in East Lansing. And I was telling some friends of mine, I said, yo, I've been in a lot of situations, and whatever happened in the situation, I probably caused it a little bit with my attitude. I said, but this was the one time I actually held it together this time. Like, I held it together. I didn't do anything. I retreated, went back the next day. Same guy come at me again. Like, I did everything in my power. And that's the one day that it actually goes wrong is the day that I try to hold it together. So it's funny to hear that. But so that transpires. You get suspended for the rest of the season. And then everything happens with Jermaine gets his suspension, Stack gets his suspension. We never get to see the true potential of that team realize. Yeah. You move on, couple stops, and then you end up with the Lakers. And I think that's where, if you tell me, but I feel like that's where your career really took a turn, where you were respected, all-star, all of those things. But then you get to the Lakers playing with Kobe. Explain that journey to me and how everything changed for you, especially perception-wise of Ron Artest, metal world peace, once you went to the Lakers.
Well, you know, it actually started out with Sacramento. So when I got the sack after Indiana, and I was going to retire actually that year, I put in my papers. So then I get to Sacramento, and I go to Coach Adelman, and I'm like, yo, Coach, I'm 273 pounds right now. I'm really not interested in playing. I was like, I don't want to make a big deal out of this, but if you could somehow, you know, keep me on the bench and, you know, I'll be there, but I'm trying to ease my way out of this thing, right? So he was like, he said, Ron, I'll try to ease my way out, right? So he was like, he said, Ron, we going to go as far as you take us. You plan to go into it, we going to go as far as you take us. That's what Coach Adelman tells me. So we in the last place in the West. So I go home that night and I start to think about it, put it in perspective. I come back next day and I say, you know what? We're going to the playoffs. And like media laughed or whatever. We go to the playoffs, almost beat the Spurs in the playoffs. And then, but that right there really, you know, got the love back. And then just being around Coach Adelman, he's like a father figure. So being around Coach Adelman, you know, I was able to just like kind of get the love and kind of respect the game more. And then I went to play for him again in Houston. You know, I kind of played pretty well there and my game was coming back because I had a couple years where I got suspended. Then the next year, I got suspended again by the team. Nobody really realized that. I got suspended again for 3 months.
Really?
Yeah, but I was suspended for the first 3 months of the season the next year.
Wow.
Wow. Then I didn't play no more for the Pacers. Then I went to Sacramento. So that's like 2 years of like, you know, I was in shape right before the brawl, you know, I was like, so, you know, it was when I got to Houston, then I was like prime, you know, I was averaging 25 in the playoffs against the Lakers. I was back to myself. Then yeah. I go to the Lakers the next year in my prime, I was 29, but I'm playing with the greatest and I'm playing with Powell. Right. So with that being said, my average go from dropped to like 6. And then that was it. Like that was all she wrote, you know. But the thing, what I really love about that moment was I was able to take away the entitled run on test and sacrifice for the team. And I just did everything I had to do. I was spotted up, you know, plenty of time, just not touching the ball. But I tried to do everything the right way. And that was the most proud of what I was of my career because, you know, I accepted, you know, something I'm not used to, which I started everywhere I went. You know, I was like go-to guy, all this stuff. And then I had to accept the role. And then I was like, okay, now I'm maturing. I realized right then and there that I was maturing.
That's beautiful. It's important, too. I think people don't realize in order to have a championship team, like guys are going to have to sacrifice because The reality is if you don't have guys that has to sacrifice something on a championship team, you don't have good enough players and you won't win anyway. Right. I think we had a similar thing with Andre Iguodala, who's obviously back, thank God. But where he's in the prime of his career and then Steve Kerr asks him to come off the bench, a lot like yourself, he goes on to win finals MVP in that finals, but a lot like yourself, you take a back seat and then the person who has to hit the big shot in game 7 is you. And if you don't take on that role, those moments never happen. Lakers never win a championship. So it's interesting to see the maturity.
Absolutely, man. That was one of my proudest moments, like the maturity side. I got a chance to actually see, you know, what it is to be a role player. I've never been a role player in my life, but I got a chance to experience it. And now when I coach to this day, I kind of understand, like, you know, a go-to guy, a role player. I coach girls also. And just having that perspective on it, you know, on the game, I understand, like, if you're really good, but hey, we need you to sacrifice. And you know what? It's going to be better for you in the long run. And I had a chance to win a title, you know, which is like really, really big if you can do it. So I'm just so grateful for the Lakers.
No, it's definitely life changing. And it also, like I spoke on the peers before, it also changes the way your peers look at you when you win those NBA finals.
Yeah, it's a little different.
For sure. But speaking of game 7, you then had that moment. You had a huge moment. I'm a fan growing up. So as growing up, I always would cheer for the Lakers because I loved Kobe and Shaq. Then obviously they split up. And I'm like, man, I still love Kobe. I love that dog. And then you go have that moment in game 7. And one of the biggest moments I personally think from that moment was afterwards. You said you wanted to shout out your therapist, and that was a big moment because number one, we had never heard a guy come out and speak on his therapist, let alone one of the toughest. No disrespect, one of the most insane guys we've seen in our league. And you come out and speak on your therapist. What gave you the confidence or made you want to speak on that?
That's actually true, man, the confidence, because at that time, your most vulnerable states. One would take that for weakness and things like that. And I just felt like the strength was in, you know, improving yourself. The strength was in being vulnerable. And that's what's going to help other people, you know, that's going through things and don't really know quite how to get through it. You know, when you're trying to improve yourself, that's big. And I just wanted to give credit where credit was due. That day in game seven, you know, we playing against the Celtics. Me and Paul got a long history. And my whole thing was stay in the game. Don't get attacked. Do not get ejected. Stay in the game, right? So the night before that, I called my therapist. She lives in Houston. And meanwhile, I've been ejected from like four playoff series against the Spurs, against the Lakers with the Rockets, against the Celtics in Indiana, against the Pistons, a game to go to the finals. I get a flagrant. They game is tied. They go up four free throws, score and win by four, go to the finals and win. Right. So this is like, I'm like, how can I gain control over this? So I call her up and I say, hey, I need you to come in the morning because I just don't feel right. And she comes that morning. I go to shoot around. I come back home. We have a quick session and we just talk about it. Like, be ready for anything and enjoy the game and stay in the moment. And then we win the championship, you know, which is like crazy to me. I never thought I'd be in a situation to win the title after like my career. And now I got this championship. I was just like, you know what? Let me just thank my psychologist. I said psychiatrist. I didn't even know the difference. I said, let me thank my psychiatrist. And she called me up and she was like, hey, Ron, I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm your psychologist. I said, oh, okay, cool. Sorry about
that. Well, for those of us that don't know the difference, can you explain that?
Yeah, the difference between psychology and psychiatry, a psychiatrist or psychiatry, they normally provide, you know, medication, right? A psychologist is more therapy, talk it over and talk it through. So I was doing, at that point in time, I was doing psychology, which is therapy, which later went to like sports therapy. Because for me, the game was everything to me. And how can you, you know, be effective on the court if you're not focused? So that's like sports therapy. You know, and I think sports therapy for a professional athlete is like huge.
And like I said, it wasn't, no one spoke about it before you did that. And I think you kind of, you pulled a lid off some things when you did that. Did you see a change in the way the league started attacking mental health after you did that? Or do you think it still took a while for the league to kind of catch up?
You know, I think it took a while for them to catch up. You know, in terms of making it public that we gonna help our players, and in terms of the players, like I'm actually gonna help myself, and I'm gonna help others. You know, by just saying I'm doing therapy, just by saying you're doing therapy or whatever. I'm not saying force it on yourself. I'm saying if you're doing it, and you know, it's really expensive, right, to get therapy, and also it's a stigma attached. So it's just so many different things, and it's so many cool things about people coming out and saying, you know, yeah, I see a therapist. This is okay. You know, you're actually helping someone. Indirectly, and maybe they never have to see a therapist because, like I said, that's $150 an hour, $100 an hour. Everybody don't got $100 an hour, you know, to see a therapist.
No, that's interesting. It's also very interesting that it's so expensive, and yet I think for most people, like, we all go through trauma, right, in life. Like, no matter who you are, you go through some sort of trauma. Most of the times, it being unrealized or undealt with trauma, and you kind of just learn how to compartmentalize it and continue to carry on. A friend of mine has this art piece, and I'm going to butcher the saying a little bit, but it's right along the same lines. And it says something about, why is a funeral so expensive? A broke man ain't got no business dying. And it's along the same lines of therapy. It's like, it's so expensive, yet we go through all of this, all the things that we go through in life. And the reality is you go through those things and you go through those traumas. A lot of people, especially in the urban community, we deal with these traumas and you don't have the financial resources to get that therapy. On top of the stigma that comes along with the therapy, you don't have the financial resources. And now it's really a thing that you never see. You never had the opportunity to speak with a therapist, to correct those faults or to learn from those things, to learn how to deal with those things. And then you're just stuck living that life.
Right. You're stuck living that life. And you're probably seeing it. We're seeing it, you know, with the people we have living in our neighborhoods. right? Yeah. Just can't get out of that rut, you know, and you're walking out your house, mean mugging, you know, once you wake up in the morning, something's bothering you, right? Like, how can we, you know, change that and, you know, give you a different perspective on life where you can go on with your life, you know, whether you're getting educated, whether you're taking a trade, whether you want to build a family, you know, different things like that versus having, you know, this blockage, you know, which is kind of mental health issues or mental health, you know, illnesses, whatever the case may be, that's blocking you from, you know, moving on with your life and your career, you know, and different things like that and your family. So I think, you know, I just think it's very important that I came out, you know, and definitely and put some and gave some exposure and released the stigma.
And speaking of the financial side of it, in the 2011-2012 season, you did something special. Being in the position that you were in financially, you did something special. Could you let everybody know what it is that you did and why did you feel the need to do that?
Yeah, man. So I won the championship ring and I raffled it off, you know. And I wanted to, I could have probably raised more money, but we raised a total of $671,000 with the ring. Then I gave all the money away to mental health institutions, one in Arkansas, one in Cleveland, two in New York, LA, Indiana, Nashville. And just wanted to bring awareness to it and let people know, like, you know, release the stigma. You know, improve yourself. And, you know, you have support. Like, we understand what you go through. You're not out there alone.
No, that's, it's a beautiful thing. And I want to say thank you for having the bravery that you had to come out and speak on that. Now, I think we have 3 mental health professionals now on staff. They're in, at least one of them's in at least once or twice a week. And I think it's a beautiful thing because you hear so many people in our league go through it, yeah, and so many people suppress it. But I don't think people really realize the mental strain that it takes to go through an NBA season. Like, I always tell people, a guy will say, oh, yeah, I'll do this to you in the league, or I'll do that, I'm better than you. And I tell people, you can't even deal with the stress of just a game day. Like, just knowing, waking up at 9 a.m. knowing I have to get to shoot around. Then after shoot around, I have film. Then after film, I'm doing some treatment. I'm doing this. All the things that lead up to going into a game, the stress alone of just a game day, you couldn't deal with.
Yeah. Whether you hop in the cold tub or not hop in the cold tub, got to play injured or not play injured. And you got to put in that work. And, you know, when you tie, are you going to keep pushing it? You're working out in the summertime. You know, yeah, it is a lot that goes into it that makes a complete player. It's true. People don't really understand.
No, it's true. Definitely. No. So, like I said, I just want to thank you for that. But and switching gears a little bit, going back to your playing career, which, like I said, I have the utmost respect for, especially as a defender. Where do you rank yourself at as far as wing defenders go? Like, I know some great ones. Obviously, I mentioned Stack Jack. Who you two strong as hell, Tony Allen. Where you rank yourself among those wing defenders?
Well, it's like, so when I was during my prime, I definitely thought I was the best. I won a defensive player of the year, and yep. I probably would have won more. I guess, I can't argue about the one when I got suspended. I don't know what would have happened that year. The next year I got left Indiana. I don't know what happened that year. But, you know, with that being said, it's something I'm really happy about. I really love talking about it. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
It's something only a few people could talk about. But as I look back at it and I was doing a lot of research, especially when you came out with your comments, I actually looked at a lot of different wing defenders. And I think Dennis Rodman's probably the best wing defender that we've seen. You got to go watch his tape. And I was looking at it, and I'm only familiar with him from the power forward position, but the way he guarded Jordan and Pippen, I was just like, oh, wow. This guy might be a better wing defender than me. I've never thought he was a better wing defender than me. But Reggie Miller thought I was probably the best. Besides myself saying I was the best, you know, a lot of media probably never gave me the credit because, you know, they just want to keep my name out their mouth. They don't want to give credit where credit's due. Like, for example,
absolutely.
It's crazy. Like, it's just so many times people left me off. I'm like, come on. I'm not even going to argue with that. But with that being said, you know, I did hold people to zero a couple times in their prime, you know, which is really difficult to do. You know, I got a lot of DMPs, people not showing up to play. So, I mean, I got to put that all in, you know, I got to put that in my bank. But with that being said, I would say top seven, maybe something like that, top 10, top seven. There's a lot of people out there that's really good. And with your, when you came out with your comment, I mean, what was interesting, it happened quick, right? So it was a shock. But when you came out, I mean, you are so versatile. You should put yourself up there, because if I did what you did, I for sure would have said I'm number one. I mean, you played the five, you played the three, you got championships to back it up. You know what I'm saying? Many people can say they're good, but you got championships, and it's not like you was averaging 30, right?
Facts.
And you did have 35 in game seven against the Cavs. So, you know, you can score.
Yes, sir.
Right? Yeah. That was a hell of a game.
I appreciate it.
I remember that game. I'm like, this guy can score too. So, you should definitely put yourself up there. Obviously, you got Rodman, you got Bill Russell. It's difficult to say you're number one, but you have got championships. So, you know, I think when it's all said and done, we should do something on ourselves, because so many times the offensive players get the pub. And as a defensive player, I want some pub.
No, 100%.
How you feel about that? You know what I mean? Like, I want some pub. Like, so I feel we should do something on that. We should be talking about that. Like, who are the best wing defenders? Who are the best defenders? And really do something on it to bring light. Like, I spent all my career, before I would pick up a ball, the first 45 minutes was running by myself, nobody in the gym. That's what I was in the gym sliding, doing my defensive slides, like putting in that work. I wasn't just a good defender. I actually had to train for it. And with that being said, I take pride in that. You know what I'm saying? And I was happy when you came out with that. I was like, yes, like somebody's talking about defense.
For sure.
So I was like, I think I tweeted that. I don't know if you saw it, but I was like really appreciative of you coming out.
For sure.
So yeah.
Absolutely. No, I a part of the reason I did say that was I think people think I talk a lot, which I have my times where I talk, but I'm very calculated. And so when I say something, I've already played out how the response is going to be, who's going to say what. Obviously, you don't know exactly what someone's going to say, but like it's going to cause this uproar. Like, I'm already aware of that. And when I said it, do I really think I'm the best defender to ever play a game of basketball? Of course not. Like, we all get in situations that may not be good for us as far as your weakness. Like,
what about your era? What do you feel about your era? Do you feel
I definitely feel like I'm the best defender in my era.
Who's that? Who compares to you? Who
Like, a guy who I have a ton of respect for is Kawhi Leonard, right? Like, I think Kawhi is an incredible defender.
Yeah.
But Kawhi also doesn't guard the post. You know, like Kawhi is on the perimeter, he's chasing guys around. You move the ball in front of him, he's going the other way. Utmost respect for Kawhi Leonard. Rudy Gobert is a good defender. But like for me, Rudy Gobert, he protects the rim. You know, like he's not guarding a wing he's not switching onto a point guard. He's not switching onto a wing. If a point guard is getting off, his coach doesn't come to him and say, hey, you take Dame Lillard, you know, or hey, you take Chris Paul. You starting the game on Chris Paul. And so, you know, those are definitely some guys that I respect. But, you know, I respect Avery Bradley, who's a ball hawk, you know, like never got the credit he deserved.
Yes. Yeah.
A ball hawk, impossible to screen. Like for myself as a screener, he's impossible to screen. And like, I respect that. And so I think it's something that, you know, when I speak up on defense, and I continue to speak about it, because I, like you said, we deserve credit too. Like, all right, so you may not be scoring the ball as much as Steph Curry, right? But we all have an impact on the game. And I always speak on, people don't talk about defense because you actually have to understand the game of basketball to speak on defense.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I can look at a guy and say, oh man, he was guarding such and such when he was on him, he ripped him, or you know, he was pressuring the ball. But I can also put that guy on a back action and watch him miss every tag that he's supposed to get on that big rolling down the lane. And then you can run and say, oh, he's a great defender because he's on the ball. No, he's not.
Right.
Because I can put him in a position that he mess up y'all entire defense.
So
when I said that, I was more so standing from the standpoint, A, to spark a conversation. Let's get talking about these great defenders. Because now, when I say I'm the best defender, now we talking about meta. Now we talking about Ron Artest. Now we talking about Scottie Pippen defense. Now we talking about Dennis Rodman. And let's make sure these flowers are being given to who they should be given to and not just someone who scored a basketball. And so that's how I always take it on the defensive end, and I speak on it because I don't think enough is said about it. And you, as you and I both know, if you don't have a defense, you can score as many points as you want. We watched it with the Warriors for years where they'd be right up there at the top of the scoring in the league and would be bottom five in the West because they didn't have a defense. And so I always try to speak on that, number one, to start the conversation, but it's also to pay respect and get these names pumping to these guys who I respect on the defensive end that should be spoke about, yourself being one of them.
I agree. And the team defense is also important, you know, those concepts and, you know, tagging and doing everything the right way, you know, not coming out the corner when the coach told you for the 100th time, you know, don't help out the corner and filling and sinking on time. And I mean, it's beautiful. You know, I truly enjoy it, you know, and it's something that I try to, you know, teach to this day. I respect it.
For sure. No, I appreciate it, man. And I don't want to take up too much of your time. I appreciate you coming on. But before I let you go, I wanted to ask you about X versus X, which is a sport platform that you're involved in. Can you explain that to us and what it can bring to the game for players?
Yeah, for sure. You know, so when I retired, I didn't really want to retire. I still wanted to play. So I said I'm going to build an app for myself so I could travel the world and play basketball because I always wanted to travel the world and play basketball. So then what I was going to do was rather than give people my number and say, hey, let's meet at this gym or whatever, you know, just sign up to this app. You play basketball. I never have to see you again. And then, you know what I'm saying? So as I was building this app, you know, travel the world and play basketball, I was like, oh, wow, it's a bigger opportunity here. And it's also an opportunity to help people get exposure that, you know, will not have the opportunity to get exposure. Because when you think of basketball, 10 to 2 is like our basketball hours. We're going to go to work. In the summertime, we're going to play ball. We're going to lift. But not everybody had those hours. Some people got to work 9 to 5. So how can you give someone working at Target to Starbucks an opportunity to still play, you know, and to still get exposure? So that's what X versus X is. You know, it gives basketball players an opportunity to connect with other basketball players, you know, play basketball on their time and build, you know, a local community and a local audience, you know, and show that you can play the game, you know, on many different levels. And we got a lot of great stories. Some people's going overseas, a couple of our players in the G League, you know, and it's very empowering. So it keeps me around the game. You know, I'm coaching a lot. You know, I'm running some games. I'm coaching some games, practicing with some of the players. You know, we're in beta right now. So we got about 10,000 people in beta. And when we come out of beta, we'll probably be one of the biggest basketball organizations in the world. You know, with that being said, it's just like keeps me around the game. I love the game of basketball. And I'm so grateful that I'm able to find something to do that keeps me around the game. So I'm like really excited about it.
That's beautiful. And when as a basketball head and huge basketball fan, when can we expect for this to be readily available to myself and everyone else that's not a part of the beta?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So right now we're in a live beta because you can't go into a basketball company and then have, you know, your CTO test the game. Like you got to get that information from basketball players. So it's live right now. We're in a live beta, which is risky because people could take your ideas, but this is the type of company that you have to be in a live beta. And you can download the app, upload basketball content, you know, create your own games. And we're going to try to, you know, really what we're doing is empowering. So digitizing competition and turning athletes into digital assets, using all the new innovations that's out there for an athlete to not only get exposure, but to also monetize, you know, your own brand and your own skills. So that's what we're doing. We're really excited about it. And we got a lot of nice tech people involved, you know, from the LA Times invested in our company, you know, to CEO Boost Mobile also involved. And we're trying to actually create a platform that's very, very empowering, you know, just in case, you know, you're not a part of the politics, you can't get into a college you want to get into. You can't get into that team in the NBA you want to get into. You know, so you come to X-Versus and we kind of help you, you kind of work through that. But I'm just really grateful for it.
That's beautiful, man. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And good luck with the platform. I'm looking forward to testing it out. Now, one more question. I lied. I know I said I'd let you go. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask this question. As a fan of yours and also as a fan of Ben Wallace, who's also like a big brother to me. A little while back, a photo came out of you guys, of you and Ben, and I thought it was a huge moment because I can relate. And the reason I can relate is not quite the same situation. Obviously, there was a brawl there, but I had something that happened publicly as well, with myself and KD. And, you know, you go through these public moments, and number one, you may want to talk to someone, you may want to have a relationship with someone, and the pressure that you're getting from the public about this moment doesn't really allow for that to take place, right? And so, whereas you and Ben, I don't know how long y'all had gone without speaking, but then this picture comes out and it sparks this whole conversation. I thought that was a huge moment because for us, especially for us as young African-American men, and, you know, it goes back to Queensbridge. Like, it goes back to Saginaw, Michigan. It goes back to Red Dirt Road, Alabama for Ben Wallace, where we grow up, we beef with the guy around the corner or the guy around the way, and we never settle that beef. And the only way it ever really gets settled is by killing, by fighting, guys fighting over and over again, and all of a sudden some guys goes to prison or something, and that's how the beef settles. But you never really see the beef settle. You never see a photo coming out where two guys are standing there and you're like, man, that's beautiful to see. Or a conversation with myself and Kevin where everybody can see, like, man, those two guys are in a room talking it out like men. I think that's a great picture for our young, especially for our young Black men to see.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that picture happened by accident. I actually spoke to Ben through direct messaging. I was trying to actually do a podcast with him right before he became a Hall of Famer. But, but with that being said, I thought it was big. I never had a problem with Ben. You know, Ben, I fouled him. He got upset. He pushed me. That's basketball. That happens, man. Mm-hmm. The only issue me and Ben had, we was like the best two defenders in the league for
absolutely
5 years. That was like, and if you're Ben Wallace, you want that award. If you're me, you know, I want that award too. And he got four of them. I got one. So I have a huge issue with that. But, right, that's like the only issue. Other than that, I mean, I love Ben. Like, he's an amazing defender. You know, he's right up my alley. Like, that's, you know what I'm saying? What's there not to love about Ben? He's never been in, like, trouble. He's a great teammate. You know, it's nothing that – I love Ben personally. With the exception of he got four Defensive Player of the Year awards, and I got one.
Which I understand as someone who also has one. I understand how hard it is to get that award. So yeah. I get the frustration. It's happened to me a couple times. Like, I feel like Kawhi Leonard got one of my awards sitting on his mantle at home. I feel like Rudy Gobert got one of my awards sitting on his mantle at home. So I definitely understand. Hey, but no matter, again, man, I just want to say thank you for coming on to this podcast, for sharing your light. You know, I think you're a beautiful person. You are an incredible basketball player, and most importantly, you're a leader. And the way you've led for guys like myself coming behind you, raising the awareness that you raised, putting your money where your mouth is, and not only starting that awareness, because I think so many times people will start to raise awareness on something, and then they don't know how to carry the message through. Like, once you've raised awareness, now it's time to put the action to the awareness and carry the message through. And you've done that, like I said, I say this for myself and for other guys that's in the lead today. Thank you for leading the way you have. We are truly appreciative of you. And you really set a path in this NBA for guys to attack the things that they need to attack. And we appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate being on. It was an honor. And, you know, I just want to say, like, I'm really proud of what you guys have been doing over there, just from a basketball perspective. You know, I don't know a lot of you guys off the court. I watch the games, and very, very impressive, very mature. And I mean, y'all changed the way the game should be played. You changed the way people are thinking about the game, you know. And so, you know, kudos to you guys over there. Don't know how it happened, but you guys are just like incredible and still back. So, you know, much, much, much luck to you guys and success to you, your families, and everything.
Thank you. Thank you, brother. And again, good luck with X versus X. I'm looking forward to getting on the platform.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
Yeah, yes, sir.
My guy.
Once again, thanks to Meta for coming onto the show and sharing all of the stories and the gems, speaking on his bravery and speaking out about mental health long before it was even a thing. Obviously, we're all aware of it now, but long before it was a thing, you're talking to a guy in the biggest moment of his life on the biggest stage, speaking on his therapist and the work that, that he was doing. And so I was extremely grateful of his interview and just his transparency and sharing those stories, because I think it's needed. We all need to hear it and understand the dynamic around athletes as a whole and how much of a strain it is on your life. And, you know, granted, and I don't take it for granted at all. It's a very special job to have. You're doing what you love for a living. But just like anything else, it does have its challenges. And that's going to be a wrap for this week's episode of the Draymond Green Show. Extremely excited about next week as well. A guy who Meta and I actually spoke about and I mentioned being one of the two guys, the strongest guys that I have faced my first couple years in the league. Extremely excited to be welcoming one half of All the Smoke to the show, Stack Jack, Steven Jackson. We're going to have the honor of hearing some of his stories, talking about his path, hearing about All the Smoke. All of that next week. Tune in to the Draymond Green Show. This week, it's a wrap. Thank y'all.